We continue the Augsburger Lecture Series this morning and also at 4 o'clock today in Common Grounds Coffee House. That's the space where we'll have a circle for engaging what we've heard and what's our role contributing to Mennonite higher education as mission. Dr. Melinda Berry is with us today, and she'll be more fully introduced in a bit by our president, Lauren Swartzendruber. Our theme for this morning is My Soul is Filled with Joy, Mariology and the Mission of Mennonite Education.
Our lecture this morning is under the auspices of the Myron S. Augsburger Annual Lectureship on Evangelism and Mission. Let me read for you the purpose statement: to provide resources to annually bring to the campus of the college and seminary a noted lecturer to address pertinent topics in the area of Christian evangelism and mission, for the stimulation and development of a vision for evangelism and missions for the students, faculty, and staff of Eastern Mennonite University. This is supported by financial resources that are the result of an endowment that was created for this purpose by Dr. and Mrs. Myron Augsburger, Myron and Esther. Myron served as president of Eastern Mennonite from 1965 to 1980, and I believe I see Myron is here at least. Please join me in thanking Myron and Esther for their generosity. Thank you. It's my honor to introduce our guest for this year, Dr. Melinda Elizabeth Berry, Assistant Professor of Theology and Ethics at Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary in Elkhart, Indiana. She also previously taught at Bethany Theological Seminary and at Goshen College. She has published on a range of topics in multiple venues. It was co-editor with Keith Graber Miller, a professor at Goshen College, of a book called Wrestling with the Text, Young Adult Perspectives on Scripture. Melinda and her family are part of Fellowship of Hope Mennonite Church in Elkhart, Indiana. In addition to thinking big and sometimes offbeat thoughts about Christianity and the mission of the church, Melinda spends her time knitting, practicing nonviolence through yoga, sharing meals with family and friends, as well as gardening and canning. She holds a PhD and prior degrees from Union Theological Seminary, AMBS, and Goshen College. Before Melinda speaks, hear this text from Job 28:12. But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Please join me in welcoming Dr. Berry.
Good morning, and I also am grateful for the opportunity to experience some music that stilled my spirit. We were having quite a few technical difficulties with my my slide presentation, so I feel a little bit more relaxed now. And hopefully the formatting, because we were crossing platforms, hopefully the formatting of the slides will continue to make them legible. Well, I continue to appreciate that the warm welcome and thoughtful conversations that I've been part of in the last 24 hours. It's been very, very rich, so thank you all. As has already been mentioned, I've been focusing my comments in a variety of places on the relationship of Mennonite education to Christian mission. To better set the stage for my remarks this morning, I want to recap a few things I've talked about so far. I started off yesterday in seminary chapel, where I reflected on the relationship of domestic violence awareness to our spirituality of justice, love, peace, and evangelism. Those things are all connected to how we live and proclaim the gospel. That is God's reconciling mission in the world. And maybe I'll just also note here quickly that as a homage to and support for the events of Take Back the Night week this week, I am wearing some socks inspired by Van Gogh's Starry, Starry Night. So thank you to those of you who've been working hard on those events this week. So after chapel, I then went to faculty lunch, where I covered a variety of themes, but my central challenge was to say that we must articulate a missional theology of education that answers this question: how does Mennonite education align with the mission of God's great shalom in the world? The thing I was realizing last evening, though, as I was getting ready for this presentation, is that I haven't actually said that much about what I mean by Mennonite education. So before I go further, I want to offer sort of a few working definitions or kind of a framework of what Mennonite education is. First and foremost, the term Mennonite education refers to a system or network of early childhood education centers, so that's preschool and daycare, elementary, middle, and high schools, colleges, universities, and seminaries that are in formal relationship to Mennonite Church USA. Now, Mennonite Church USA, as you may or may not know, is made up of about 97,000 members, making it the largest Mennonite denomination in the United States. Now, if we take a look at this little graph here, though, that's got data that's been compiled by the Pew Research Center, we'll see, though, that that 97,000 is really a really tiny, tiny drop in the bucket of the 70% of U.S. Americans who identify themselves as Christian. So relative to the United Methodists, of whom there are 7.7 million in the United States, Catholics, of whom there are 69.4 million, Mennonite Church USA is a small group. In fact, when organizations like the Pew Research Center collect information about the religious lives of people in this country, sometimes Mennonites show up in the data sets as Peace Church Protestants, and sometimes we show up as Evangelical Protestants. So in this particular graph, our 97,000 would be in that top bar of Evangelical Protestants, which is a big, big category, okay? So we're just a teeny tiny dot in that big, big category. Mennonite education also refers to a way of approaching the educational process of teaching, learning, and faith formation that reflects the historical development of Mennonites in America. So part of the reason that universities, colleges, and seminaries in this system of Mennonite education each have a different ethos is because each campus reflects the religious and cultural moments in history and the worldview that motivated the founders to establish the training school or biblical institute that was the precursor to the present-day college or university. And then each time, those schools were established and kind of turned a new corner of growth, that transition from academies and institutes into accredited undergraduate schools also included a geographical move, which I think is pretty interesting. Eastern Mennonite University is a clear example of this pattern. I know you're getting ready for a centennial celebration, and so I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that in the years to come. Having been established as a four-week Bible institute back in 1915 in actually Northern Virginia, then Eastern Mennonite School moved here to the Shenandoah Valley in about 1917. 30 years later, in 1947, the school received approval from the state of Virginia for its first four-year degree with regional accreditation following in 1959. And here you see a photograph of the first graduating class from Eastern Mennonite back in 1917. Let's see, now I lost my place. Okay. Here at each of the turning points in EMU's history, Mennonite education, and EMU is an example of this, Mennonite educational institutions have had to establish and revisit their organizational mission. As noted in the 90th anniversary issue of EMU's magazine, alumni magazine Crossroads, initially, the mission of Eastern Mennonite School was to offer Bible and vocational education at a level equivalent to today's junior and senior high schools in an effort, note this, to keep Mennonite girls and boys in the fold of the church. At the turn of the previous century, Mennonite leaders observed with alarm that young men and women were eager to have training for ministry, teaching, or vocations, and were seeking it at non-Mennonite schools, which often led to their departure from the church, or more correctly, their departure from the denomination. There's a clear difference between that articulation of mission and EMU's current purpose. You have some of the text here flanking me on either side of the stage. And if you go to the About section of your campus's website, you're going to find a link titled Mennonites and EMU, responding to the question, do I need to be Mennonite to attend EMU? Well, the answer is no. And yet, Mennonite also, because EMU strives to be and create an educational setting that reflects contemporary Mennonite values in a way that's more inclusive than that original mission of trying to keep young people in the fold of this faith tradition. So there are a variety of values, from peace building and global community and cross-cultural awareness to faith and fellowship, service to others, sustainability, and stewardship. Your mission statement is comprised of statements about identity, purpose, vision, and shared values that's summarized in this paragraph. EMU educates students to serve and lead in a global context. Our Christian community challenges students to pursue their life calling through scholarly inquiry, artistic creation, guided practice, and life-changing cross-cultural encounter. We invite each person to follow Christ's call to bear witness to faith, serve with compassion, and walk boldly in the way of nonviolence and peace. Can I get an amen? In other words, whether you are Mennonite or not, by virtue of your presence in this learning community, you are part of the system of Mennonite education that shares some of these values articulated in EMU's mission statement. Now, all of that said, it's also important to say that Mennonite Church USA and her members are in a time of deep, seemingly fathomless transition, and I would add to that, conflict. One of the sectors where this transition and this creative conflict has been churning and stirring for decades is in this Mennonite educational system. With declining birth rates, increased patterns of assimilation, and increased racial and ethnic diversity among Mennonites in the United States, the colleges, universities, and seminaries of our denomination have been struggling with traditional definitions of Mennonite education, like I've already contrasted. Gone are the days when schools like EMU or Bethel College or Goshen College or Bluffton University or Heston College can meet their enrollment goals by recruiting young people from Mennonite communities and congregations. Our seminaries are growing more dependent on ecumenically diverse student bodies as well. In fact, when it comes to the undergraduate degree programs, we can see in data collected by the Mennonite Education Agency, Mennonite young people are not always interested in being part of the learning communities on Mennonite college campuses. Apart from the polity questions these trends and dynamics raise, I think there's an incredible opportunity for us to talk about our hopes for the renewal of vision and clarity of purpose for the system of Mennonite higher education in helping the church accomplish God's reconciling mission in the world. As a Black feminist Mennonite woman committed to thinking critically about Mennonite educational philosophy and practice, I have found myself articulating a philosophy and theology that grows from a tradition of non-conforming freely in the more with less tradition of Mennonitism that was described by Doris Jansen Longacre in her landmark book, Living More with Less. And you can see a copy of the 1980s design of that book there on the screen. In her book, Longacre defined five life standards that I believe ground Mennonite education, especially higher education, and they're enumerated here on this poster that was created by the Syracuse Cultural Workers Artist Collective. These five life standards include doing justice, learning from the world community, cherishing the natural order, nurturing people, and non-conforming freely. Do you hear some resonance between these life standards and some of the marks of the mission of EMU? I do. I hope you do too. Now, this is not a time to debate the merits or theological content of the more with less life standards. Rather, I want to share them with you to show how these standards become for us an aesthetic of simplicity, integrity, Christian discipleship, and service that describes the beauty and power of Mennonite higher education. This beauty and power is, in turn, symbolized by the image of Mary, the alma mater. And I'll get into that in just a few minutes. First, I want to talk about Christ, what it means to be Christ-centered. Whether in informal or formal descriptions of their life and culture, all of the higher education institutions that are connected to Mennonite Church USA identify themselves as being Christ-centered. This phrase is not uniquely Anabaptist or Mennonite. In fact, I would argue it comes to us from the rhetoric that's intended to evoke a Christology that is highly individualized and generically or broadly Christian. The problem with what I'm calling generic Christian language is that it can make sense of an image like this. This is a Jesus Christ action figure called the peacemaker. Like other forms of Christological speech, the historic Peace Church tradition, of which Mennonite Church USA and EMU are a part, describes Jesus the Christ as the expression of God that gathers us together in communities that listen for and discern the meaning of Jesus' enduring call to follow in the way that leads to salvation. Unlike other generic forms of Christological speech, Mennonite theology and educational philosophy are based on the belief that the call to follow in the way is most clearly expressed in our communal renunciation of violence, including imperial Christianity and Christendom, and our turn to embrace God's justice of shalom. In other words, this image is not what we mean when we talk about being Christ-centered in Anabaptist Mennonite learning community. So, what does Christ-centered education mean to us when we're in a Mennonite setting? Well, I would suggest that it means learning, knowledge, and self-awareness are based on a commitment to the pursuit of God's wisdom, that we study war no more, and choose a posture of servanthood when we interact with one another. This is a photograph that comes from this campus. It's a sculpture titled Love Essence that was created by Esther Nis Augsburger. And to me, how different is this than Jesus the peacemaker, who is wearing khakis and military fatigues and holding a dove of peace? I think it's quite different. But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Well, in the world of the ancient Near East, this was a cradle for mythologies and theologies that continue to shape the symbols, images, and personifications that continue to manifest in societies and cultures around the globe, including seeking to answer this question, what is the nature of wisdom and where we find it? Mary, I think we can all agree, is no exception to this. She functions in many ways as a religious symbol. And I've been intrigued by the symbolism of Mary and the fact that in Anabaptist theology, we don't usually talk much about Mary, but that is starting to change. So I've come to my study of Mary through feminist theology and its use of comparative religious studies to understand who and what Mary is and the radical nature of her symbolic identity for us as Christians. What I have found is that Mary can be interpreted and is seen as a manifestation of both human and divine archetypes. As such, she invites us to consider how we can weave together what I think of as the strands or principles of earthly femaleness and divine femininity to resource our female and feminine poor religious life. Again, this isn't the time to reflect on the ways that patriarchy and male supremacy have distorted the Christian gospel. Rather, my intention is to explore the relationship between Jesus and his mother, Mary. Mary, like Jesus, is both a person in history and an enduring symbol of God's power to transform us into agents of God's justice. How does she do this? Well, I would suggest as the alma mater. I've been using that phrase enough now that it's time for me to start talking about it a little bit. Alma mater is a term we associate with high school songs and being alumni. It's a Latin phrase that we can translate as nourishing or bounteous mother. If we borrow from Spanish, where alma means soul, then we can speak of the alma mater as a soul mother as well. But how does this title apply to Mary? Well, in both the ancient world and our own, religion is a phenomenon of great diversity. Through the ages, as religious leaders and thinkers have tried to get it right, they have sometimes gotten it wrong, the it being what can be viewed as legitimate and correct belief. One thing I think that religious leaders of the Christian West and our own Anabaptist Mennonite tradition have gotten wrong about Mary is that she is merely a handmaid of God. In Christian mythology and symbolism, Mary is actually a blending of two important traditions of divine female and feminine archetypes, the mother and the virgin. The ancient Greeks and Romans described the alma mater as a goddess, associating her with the various mother goddesses and some of the virgin goddesses throughout the Greco-Roman world, particularly Gaia, Cybele, Rhea, Demeter, and Athena in the Greek tradition, and Tellus, Ceres, Minerva in the Roman. In contrast to the Greco-Roman tradition, a stream of Mariology, that is teaching, belief, and devotion shown to Mary, emerged among medieval Christians that linked Mary to the alma mater archetype. In this tradition, Mary became a synthesis of mother and virgin tropes, demonstrating both the miraculous nature of the incarnation and the participation of a female body in God's revelation and salvation without the direct participation of a male body. Right, the fact that Mary conceived Jesus through an act of the Holy Spirit is part of what makes Mary so special in Christian theology and in the biblical narrative. Mythologies have mingled, and the alma mater has come to represent not only a bounteous, nurturing soul mother, but the educational institutions where we have studied. So hang with me here for a little bit while I make some of these connections. Here is the alma mater depicted as Tellus in the altar of Augustan Peace. In 2006, a new museum was opened to preserve this altar in Italy. But like much of Rome's great architectural feats, this altar was built to commemorate peace achieved by military victory, what we call the Pax Romana. The Campus Martius, or the Field of Mars, was a publicly owned area of ancient Rome, about 490 acres in size. The Campus Martius also held the Ara Pacis, the altar of peace that was built by the Senate to mark the establishment of peace by Augustus. It was intended to symbolize the successful completion of Augustus's efforts to stabilize the empire. In other words, Tellus, this alma mater, is the nourishing mother of those who conquer and rule and call it peace. This is the iconic alma mater who presides over the campus of Columbia University in New York City. If she reminds you of the statue of Abraham Lincoln in Washington, D.C., it's no coincidence because she was created by the same artist, Daniel Chester French. She is one of many representations of the alma mater that became popular to place on university campuses in the United States. The tradition of personifying educational institution as alma mater began in Europe and has grown over time to include not only the school, but the song associated with that institution. The alma mater at Columbia is considered to be a representation of the goddess Minerva, or Athena, an interesting choice given that Athena and Minerva are one of the virgin goddesses. But here, wisdom becomes the nourishing mother of knowledge. French's alma mater clearly represents the traditions of classical liberal arts education, but on the campus of a corporate university, she also represents the commodification of education and the role U.S. educational institutions have played in building the nation's military-industrial complex. You'll recall that the Manhattan Project of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, this was their part of their multi-site project that successfully developed the atomic bomb, included Columbia University. This alma mater represents the gaining of knowledge and insight to destroy the planet. This slide of the Madonna with Child gives us a popular depiction of Mary as from the medieval period, roughly the 5th to 15th centuries. As I mentioned earlier, during this period, Christians saw in Mary a manifestation of the alma mater. Rather than Mother Earth or Goddess Wisdom, they saw in her the doorway to salvation opened. The Litany of Loreto is one of the forms that that lists various titles for Mary, including the Seat of Wisdom. In this sculpture, Mary appears throne-like, and the infant Christ is seated on her lap. Visually, we were reminded of both Tellus holding children in her lap and Minerva on her throne, presiding over knowledge. We also know that during the medieval period, the use of female and feminine imagery to describe the church became an important part of popular piety. The scriptural image of the church as Christ's bride, combined with the mythological trope of the God-king, whose mother becomes his queen and bride, make Mary a symbol of the church, who is wedded to Christ. At the same time, like the goddesses of the Greek and Roman traditions, the image of Mary as Mother Church is double-edged for those who view God's shalom as the renunciation of violence and not merely the preservation of peace. Mennonite education operates within a worldview that offers strong critique of Constantinian and imperial forms of Christianity as vital for our commitment to nonviolence. So part of what I'm trying to say here is that that this particular image of Mary that comes to us through the art of Western Christendom invites us to think about a different way of Christ-centeredness, but we still need to bring a kind of critical lens to understanding and interpreting it. And in fact, part of what I am wanting to communicate here is that if we start to think about places like EMU as your alma mater, at like Mary, then to be Christ-centered is to put Christ in the seat of wisdom, right? Christ-centeredness is not about solely about the experience of gaining knowledge and insight to be a better Christian in terms of building my relationship with God. It is about this broader, deeper sense of God's mystery, God's word, God's wisdom, and that comes together in Christian discipleship centered around the nonviolent Christ. The last image I want to share here is one that I'm offering as a kind of image of the Mennonite alma mater as well. This piece by Jan Richardson is not a depiction of Mary, but it speaks of the importance of being rooted as a strong tree that produces good fruit from generation to generation. Unlike the Roman altars commemorating military peace, the corporate universities doing their part for the war machine, like Columbia, and the lust for power of imperial Christendom in much of contemporary U.S. American Christianity, I believe Mennonite higher education offers its students and the world something more deep, something more nourishing, and something more wise. The opportunity and invitation to lay down sword and shield so that we might serve one another, so that we might serve the world. The opportunity to be like a tree planted by the water. The opportunity to seek wisdom seated in the lap of his mother. Christ-centered education hungry to find God's great shalom. Our schools are manifestations of Mary, the seat of wisdom, Mother Church, alma mater, and mother root, who teaches her children to study war no more.
Thank you for hanging with us, those of you who could, and for your presentation. We're so grateful. It is available as an audio podcast. If you know of others who couldn't be here, let them know they can listen to yesterday's chapel gathering talk and today. We have selected a song of response. It's Sing the Journey number 13. And if you can stay, please do. Alpha Omega dancers will be dancing to the refrain. I encourage you to try to look up, but also maybe have the text in front of you. Anne and Maria will lead out.